This podcast is a service of South Canyon Baptist Church in Rapid City, South Dakota. For more information about our church, visit southcanyonbaptist.org.
Good morning, South Canyon. This is Pastor Kevin. I'm here with Pastor Brent, Pastor Josh, and we're here this morning just wanting to share a little bit with you guys about our vision for the church, sharing our hearts. So we're going to do a two-part series. The first one, we're going to focus on kind of outside our walls and what we hope, what we dream, what we're praying for outside our walls, even the track that we're on now. And then the second part, we're going to come back and talk about what's going on inside our church, what we're hoping, dreaming, praying for. So we're going to start this morning with just covering a recent change that we made. So we have been part of the NAB, the North American Baptist Church, for probably as long as we've existed. So I think it was founded, the church was founded as a part of the NAB. And this past year, our church voted on the decision to become a part of the SBC, the Southern Baptist Conference. And so we are now duly affiliated. So let's jump into this and talk about, just for those who didn't attend that meeting maybe, or anyone who might be listening, what that means to be duly affiliated and then why we did that. So Brent, what does that mean?
Well, being duly affiliated means that we continue to be connected to and identified with the North American Baptist Conference. We especially appreciate the folks that are a part of the Great Plains Association of the North American Baptist Conference. There are pastors, particularly in the East River area, that we have connected with and are very kindred spirits with. And so we continue to be a part of that and appreciate that opportunity. I'll actually be leaving later today to be a part of a general conference meeting that's an NAB meeting. So we're still connected there. But we also saw some benefits and some advantages to identifying with and being a cooperating church in the Southern Baptist Convention. And I guess one of the things that made that very attractive to me particularly was the International Mission Board and just the size and the vision of the International Mission Board under the leadership of David Platt. Many of you will know David Platt with Secret Church and his book Radical, possibly. He's a leader who has a very biblical, God-centered, gospel-centered passion for world missions and reaching the unreached, and that's something that is important, I think, biblically, and something that I have a passion for. So I think it's a great way for people in our congregation who are sensing God's call in that direction. It would be a great avenue, and I think if a child of mine were to go overseas, that's how I would encourage them to go and consider that way of going, because of the training, because of the support, because of the network, the size, and oversight. Just all that goes along with that, the kind of oversight they would get and support they would get. So it's just that's one of the big things about the Southern Baptist Convention that I think is very helpful and one of the biggest assets and advantages to our being a part of the Southern Baptist Convention.
Josh, talk about some of the reasons why we've made that decision, and our leadership just felt like that was good for our church. What are some of the changes that have happened in the Southern Baptist Convention? And just talk about some of those things.
Historically, the Southern Baptists have a long history of being a very evangelistic and mission-minded group of people. In the last, and Brent lived through a lot of this, the denomination had gone very liberal, had become very much critical of the Bible, just loose on doctrine, and just through a major work of God and a long, difficult process, the denomination essentially turned back towards orthodoxy, towards an inerrant Bible, sound doctrine. So if you go from, the way the Southern Baptists were maybe in the 70s to where they are today, it's vastly more healthy across the board, seminary-wise, leadership-wise, local church-wise, and every human organization drifts away from orthodoxy. That's why there's always a need to start new things. So it's really remarkable when a group like that moves back towards orthodoxy. That only is done by the power of the Spirit. And so now we're bearing the fruit of what, you know, was difficult challenges for the Bible, fights for the Bible, and we're seeing the fruit of that. And I would say another part of joining the SBC is just the quality of the seminaries and the fact that when you're an SBC church and you're a supporter of that, it brings the costs and availability of, of the seminary way down to just a very affordable level. And because the seminaries have essentially returned to the Bible, they, all of them, I think, are sound, solid places to send people for ministry training. And so we feel really, really good about that. I think another aspect that's a benefit to adding the SBC is just that we've got more sister churches just around us. There's only one NAB church within, 200 miles of us?
Spearfish, right?
In Spearfish, yep. And so now, just immediately, we have been brought into a family of churches where there's, I think, at least 20 in the Black Hills, maybe not quite that many, I'm not sure. And so we've just immediately gained, linked arms, joined with a lot of other churches that we can be of benefit to and who are joining in our mission here. So I think that's an advantage, too, for us to be a part of that. And, you know, people have asked if this is a step towards leaving the NAB, and I don't think so. I think we love our NAB friends, especially those across the Great Plains, and we very much want to stay involved and help them. And we want to see both both families of churches flourish. And so we just feel like we can manage being a part of two families.
So. Let me ask this. For somebody who in our church who kind of wonders why any of this really matters. So when we ask them to pray for the NAB, for the SBC, for our church leadership, how do you guys feel like it affects our church without them even knowing it? What are ways that it impacts them, that it affects them?
I guess what I would say is both of those, both the NAB conference and the Southern Baptist Convention, are obviously networks of churches, and there's always benefit from the camaraderie, the fellowship, from the training that's a part of that. And so your pastors are encouraged and strengthened, and our lives are strengthened, and our ministry is, you know, there's training and so forth that helps us, I think, continue to be effective or become more effective in that way. You know, and identifying with a particular denomination does, you know, have certain connotations to people, and some of those, you know, can be good, can be bad, but we feel like these two groups really do exemplify biblical faithfulness and also are committed to church planting, and that's something that when you're a part of a network, you can do more than you might be able to do just as a single church if you're cooperating with other churches and working together to start churches and to send missionaries. That's how it helps. It helps in those ways particularly, and I think we're able to be a part of something bigger and something broader, I think, by being a part of both of these groups.
I think it's biblical for churches to work together, especially when they see the in partnership of the gospel going forward. So I think it speaks loudly to a culture and where individualism and total, and as Baptists, we do have autonomy. None of these denominations can force us to do anything. So we think that's biblical too. But if you look through the book of Acts and you look through the New Testament, it seems like Paul, when he writes to these churches, that he expects them to be partners in the advance of the gospel. He expects churches to give when there's needs in Jerusalem and to support him as he goes and plants more churches. And so he wants these churches to see themselves as brothers and sisters, partners in the gospel, and not just individual little kingdoms. And I think that's important. So hopefully that this is just our way of saying, hey, we're not on our own. We want to be a part of things with others and help them flourish and help cooperate together our resources and our
that's good.
I think it's biblical.
Yeah. Let's change gears a little bit and talk about the TPA program for a minute. This is something that we've talked about a lot over the last year, certainly us pastors and elders. Hopefully our church has gotten the sense of what it is and why. So, but let's talk about that for maybe a few minutes. talk about what we're seeing now, what we're hoping and dreaming for it in the future, and really why we're doing this, why we believe that God has called us to do this. So what are we seeing now, Josh?
I think that the TPA stands for the Timothy Pastoral Apprenticeship, and it was started by some of our NAB brothers and sisters over in Sioux Falls who just were just looking at, I think, their own seminary education. We're looking at just their experiences in ministry and looking out across the landscape. And just realize that just because you go to a seminary doesn't mean you're a pastor. And that ultimately, if you look down through church history, seminaries are a relatively recent thing in terms of it being a autonomous, kind of separate from the church, academic institution. You know, historically, it's been, and I think this is biblical, it's that local churches make pastors. Seminaries don't make pastors. Local churches don't make pastors. So the philosophy there then is that why do we send a guy who has flourished in our ministry, feels called to do ministry, why does he then move to an institution where being part of a local church is going to be hard, and the people who have been shepherding him are now removed from them, and they're going off to be sort of institutionalized, and then... And I can think of, you know, in Bible college and seminary, all the guys that I went with, and I would say maybe 20% of them are still in some sort of ministry. So they got all the stuff in their head, but they didn't cultivate a heart or an ability to lead and love people, to shepherd, which is really what a pastor is a shepherd. So that's the, I'm going to get to your question eventually, but so that's the thought, is that how can we equip the local church to be the primary agent of recognizing and equipping men for shepherding within God's church, and just break out of our sort of American paradigm that you have to have a degree or you have to have a certain sort of paper certification to be a faithful shepherd of God's people. Mm-hmm. And so that's what it is. It's just constructed. Take what's good from the seminary, but then put it right in the heart of the local church, mm-hmm. under the oversight of people who are actually doing it. So it's meant to be sort of a boot camp. It's meant to be tough and rigorous. It's got all of the academic rigors of a traditional seminary, mm-hmm. but it's got the careful shepherding and watch of a local church. And then I think it puts the onus then on the local church that this is part of your responsibility to recognize and encourage and benefit from this guy's shepherding. So I think South Canyon should not see the TPA as something we as pastors are doing, mm-hmm. trying to create little mini-me's. That's not it at all. We're trying to bring forth guys who have a desire. That's the first qualification, 1 Timothy 3. He who desires to be an overseer desires a good thing. And then there's qualifications that must be evident, not just to the person, but to the whole community that mm-hmm. they give at attesting to. And so that's what it is it's an opportunity to go, these guys seem to have a desire, want to put the effort in, yeah. and then it's our job over the course of 3 years to give them what they need and see if it, yeah. if there's a flourishing for shepherding and a gifting.
So we've got two guys right now who have expressed that desire on some level. Explain, Josh, what the, kind of the different facets of what they're walking through, the different components.
Yeah, there's several components. There's the core academic component, which is very much the core part that you would get at any seminary. It is master's level study. So this is graduate level work, and it's got the languages, it's got church history, it's got theology, it's got preaching, and they have to do 30 credits of that. And then there's 30 credits of what is called electives, which would be, they can kind of fill in the blank. So for Jordan, who desires to go to the mission field, we'll help him, we'll craft some things together as pastors, things that will help equip him for his particular specialty and gifting and calling in ministry. So if a guy came, his electives could be more worship focused, or they could be more, I don't know, whatever. But on top of that, and typically that's all a traditional seminary will give you. But the TPA also has a reading plan in addition to that, where you read a large selection of key books for ministry and you read them with your pastors, with your mentor pastors. That's unique for it to be that kind of thing. And then in addition to that, there's a list of ministry experiences. So there's things like participating in a funeral, doing a hospital visit, teaching a class, preaching, counseling. And so there's just this whole range. What's the whole range of shepherding? And we want to see you be able to do it. Mm-hmm. So instead of it, you know, it's kind of like, you know, if you're gonna train a car mechanic, you know, you can give him a textbook and make him pass a test. But maybe at some point you ought to have the guy get in there and see if he can change the oil and watch him do it. And that's the kind of thing, is that mm-hmm. seminary just kind of gets you the textbook. Yeah. The TPA gives you the textbook, and then goes, let's see if the guy can do it.
Yeah.
And under the oversight and care of the church, the guy can fail and learn and grow and develop within the structure and love of his own church family that he's mm-hmm. been a part of.
Mm-hmm. Brent, let's talk about the prayer and the dreams, the hopes for the TPA, and maybe start with why this? Why is this a thing that we are choosing to prioritize, to focus mm-hmm. on?
A lot of things come back to this, and that is our desire to see the gospel multiply, to see churches planted and multiply, you know, and through that more and more believers come to Christ and people built up in their faith. And so this is a way we can be a part of that directly, and we can train young men who have a sense of calling into pastoral ministry, whether that's to be a missionary or to be a pastor, a youth pastor, a worship pastor. And our desire is to be a sending church, you know, to send out people who will strengthen and who will build and who will expand the kingdom. So it's a way we can do that. It's a way we can do that directly by giving them, like Josh has just said, kind of what they need in terms of training, in terms of formal training, but also in terms of practical, hands-on experience and opportunity to learn under the guidance and encouragement of pastors who've been in ministry for a while longer. So it just gives us an opportunity to do, I think, on a broader scale, what Paul, you know, said to Timothy, the things you've heard from me in the presence of faithful men, teach other men who will be able to teach others also. Mm-hmm. So we're desiring that these guys are going to be trained and taught and equipped, and then they're going to go out and they're going to be a part of training, equipping, and sending others. Mm-hmm. So it's just, again, the gospel vision, the New Testament commission and vision of multiplication and spreading God's word.
And I, you know, just as the TPA is relatively new, but it's been long enough to see sort of how it works. And it's interesting because actually there's not very many guys who started end up finishing it. So it's amazing how many guys will get into it and benefit greatly, but then just discover that this isn't what they're cut out for. And I can remember guys both in Bible college and seminary, you know, they were just taking the classes and no one had the courage to tell them, hey, brother, you're not called to do this. Mm-hmm. So I can think of one guy in particular that he's a cashier at McDonald's trying to pay off $120,000 worth of Bible college debt. Mm-hmm. And he's just, no church is going to hire him. He just doesn't have the gifting for it. It's not, you know, that's not bad. It's just, but at an institution, it was all about if you can pay for the classes and you can pass the classes, mm-hmm. then you get a degree that says you can do this. But there was never any actual personal shepherding. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing how this is an opportunity for people to test that calling, see if there's some flourishing, some gifting within that. And then in the end, if it doesn't work out, they're just great, solid church members who've benefited, yeah. but they've also, you know, they're not $80,000 in debt mm-hmm. and nothing they can do. And so, you know, also just think about even just within, since we've joined the SBC, there's five or six churches just in the Black Hills, small little churches that don't have pastors. Mm-hmm. And you got guys who've got debt from their degrees, so they have to come and they have to find a church that can pay them an equivalent amount to be able to do that. And that leaves a lot of churches, I think, here in South Dakota and across the Midwest without pastors. And so, but if there's a training program here that's within the Midwest, that's in our culture, and a guy can go because he doesn't have a lot of debt, go and serve faithfully in a smaller church, then that benefits our.
And piggybacking on that a little bit, I think it's important for our folks to know that, you know, Jordan kind of came up in our church and we knew Jordan over time. Stephen has recently come. And so there is a sense in which we, in this process, as Josh was just saying, we're able to observe and so forth. And year one is a pretty significant year. It's a way for us to really begin and take big strides toward evaluating where a person really is for their good. And so in a sense, year one is not a trial. I don't know if that's the best word for it, but it is a way. It's really an important time, year one, for us to evaluate, to know, get to know, watch, mm-hmm. and see where a person is. And then as they exhibit the qualities and the commitments and the giftings and so forth that we believe we see in them in terms of ministry, then year two and three come and we begin to see.
It ramps up a little.
Yeah.
And you know, what's cool is that it's not just Jordan and Stephen, but there's four or five other guys who have desire who, mm-hmm. maybe the TPA is just not the right fit now, or maybe it will be one day. That is, I think, one of the signs of a healthy church is when you have a word-centered ministry and there's a health in the church, then there's people who want to be a part of leading that kind of thing. And that's what's cool about South Canyon and why the TPA is. It's the health of our church and the gospel-centeredness of our church that is making gospel work really appealing. to young men, and God uses that to call. And you can see that down through church history. Spurgeon had a great, you know, word-centered ministry. Calvin, Luther. You can just go down through church history that when there's good gospel church, not just the pastors preaching the word well, but also the congregation responding to God's word, God loves to then use that to call others to go. What a high calling! What a great work! What a sweet thing to be a part of, to be a pastor. And God's doing that here, which is cool. Yeah. And the TPA just gives us resources to build guys who could do it somewhere else someday.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a minute to this last part and talk about our missions efforts, both abroad and locally. Our desire to just see the gospel advance in those ways. So let's talk about some main efforts that we're making abroad. What does that look like? What's our hope? What's our vision for the gospel, for gospel advancement, and both first abroad, and then let's talk about local.
I guess one thing we could say is this past summer we had a group that went to Haiti. We have a sister church there. We're paying the pastor's salary in Haiti. That's not significant, but it is still, as far as on our end, it's not significant, but we're able to help in that way. We were able to be there. We were able to do a lot of teaching there. Jordan and Josh and myself particularly were able to teach the people in that congregation on a Saturday for most of the day, and then again on Sunday for a good portion of the day. And their hunger, their interest was exciting to see. The increase in the number of men from the year before when the youth group had been was very encouraging. So we... that's one particular place where we have a sister church, and we see some evidence of growth and health in that church. The new pastor that's there seems to be solid and seems to be very well respected by the people, and is a good leader. So we're grateful for that.
Let me interrupt there real quick and ask just for clarification. We pay the pastor's entire salary.
Yes.
I think if you're listening to this, that's a real encouragement. We're not just paying, you know, three pastors on salary at South Canyon. We're paying another one in another country with a congregation of
150-ish.
Yeah, somewhere. In a poor, tiny, poor little fishing village where it's just not possible for those people at this point.
Yeah.
Church and too young and too poor at this point to have a full-time shepherd.
Right, right.
And our harvest offering, not this past year, but the year before, actually paid for a house on site that he will be able to live in when they complete it, and it's in process of being completed. He's actually traveling right now,
really
about
wonderful.
30 miles to the church right now. He was recently widowed, and so he has four children, and so that's a real challenge, obviously.
Yeah.
And so working through those issues, but... Yeah. Job is his name, and he's a good man, very good man, and we're grateful to be in partnership with him.
Yeah, that's worth highlighting.
Transporting from where he lives to the village, 30 miles, four kids on a motorcycle.
Yeah.
So the man is faithful.
And he doesn't have one. I mean,
he's faithful.
Basically motorcycle taxis and
which
stuff.
Which is a need.
Which is a need,
And when I went last time, the year before, the church was probably 60 people, and I would guess there was a total of maybe three or four men in the whole church. Shortly after that, Job came on. We became a sister church, sort of helped provide some resources for them to be able to get a shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
And they had selected, the mission team had selected Job, and he was willing to go. And then it's amazing, just a year later, you know, there's 150 people in this fishing village and probably 40 men.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just remarkable, and just a real testament to his faithful shepherding and the fact that there was a lot of gospel potential there that just needed someone to point the way. So.
And then this summer, we're going to Romania. That's the plan at this point. And that's an NAB missionary that we've been associated with for a while, the Gurkis. And we've lately been taking a lot more initiative in terms of being in contact and staying in contact and knowing a lot more about our missionaries. And that's a missionary couple that we've had the opportunity recently. They came to our church, and some folks here had an opportunity to meet them. Mm-hmm. And so we're planning to go there, and we'd love to see people if possible. I think we're looking at when? June, July?
Yeah, mid-June to early July.
We have a significant effort as well in with Jamin Eben, Adam Hoyt, to name a few. Probably need a list of this.
Yeah, Adam is in India.
Okay.
Serving probably for a couple of years is his hope, and he's in process of applying to be a full-time career missionary with the IMB, the International Mission Board of the Southern Baptist Convention. While where he is where he hopes to be once he's appointed full-time. And then Jamin's with TTI, Teaching Truth International, where he's basically going to equip pastors where the pastors don't have anything like a seminary or a TPA, mm-hmm. where they can get some real sound training and they aren't easily led astray by mm-hmm. wrong doctrine and can have some further equipping in terms of just mm-hmm. spiritual growth. So he's very involved in that so that mm-hmm. the gospel can continue to grow in those areas and churches can be stable. Mm-hmm. So
philosophically, the big picture that we as the elder board are moving towards and wanting to get more and more clear within our large funding is that we want to prioritize the kinds of missionaries that are doing gospel advancing work. So supporting medical missions or that kind of is all good, but ultimately we want to have people hear the gospel and be gathered into churches. So we want to prioritize that. Digging wells is great. Medical missions is great, and we want to be parts of that, but we want the primary thrust of ours to be relieving spiritual suffering, the advancement mm-hmm. of the gospel. We believe that's ultimately what's going to change people is the gospel and not just social works. So mm-hmm. So we want to focus our energy that on people who are going to be sharing the gospel with people and planting and establishing churches. We want have a very church-centered, because we believe that's God's plan. Yeah. That's the plan of the gospel. Yeah. So we're going to prioritize that kind of thing in our funding. And we're trying to work our way there over the next few years to get really focused in on those who are tethered to a local church, teaching sound doctrine, and calling people to faith in Jesus Christ above and beyond anything else. So that's our philosophy there. And particularly among people who maybe have never heard the gospel, we want to prioritize that as well.
And at the same time, we recognize our responsibility as the local church to meet felt needs in our community. So we have a biblical responsibility to do that. And we're doing that through Love Inc., through Cornerstone Rescue Mission, through CareNet Pregnancy Center, through Hands of Faith. These different places that we're prioritizing gospel ministry and care for the poor, specifically charity, to be able to support that. Because we, as a church, are unable to meet those kinds of needs. We don't have the administrative staff. We don't have the facility to be able to do those kinds of things. So we feel like that it is biblically our responsibility to significantly support these ministries who care for people in our own community in that way.
I think we're called to be the primary gospel witness in our community, mm-hmm. and then we partner with organizations that can kind of help us do some of the social work. Okay. I think when we go overseas, we want to export a gospel witness that then hopefully will develop and mature to where they can also meet mm-hmm. social needs there. Mm-hmm. But for us to just go meet social needs over there without there being a sustained gospel presence is just unproductive.
Right.
But to go and go plant a church with transformed gospel people who then will meet the needs of their brothers and sisters, I mm-hmm. think looks a lot more like Acts in the New Testament.
Yeah. Thanks for being with us today. We hope that this was informative and encouraging to you. We would like to invite you, if you have any questions, please email us, email the office. We'd love to discuss anything you have questions about. God bless you. Thanks for joining.
This podcast has been a service of South Canyon Baptist Church. Thank you for joining us today. We hope that this production has been an encouragement to you. May God bless you.